This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not so nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in Indiana discussing a female Charles Manson.
Then we'll talk about a satanic carnival cult. Buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Hoosier State.
Larry Sells spent his career prosecuting murderers in Marion County, Indiana. He has over 70 convictions, but the case of Sarah Jo Pender haunts him to this day. In 2002, he successfully prosecuted the 21-year-old after he alleged she was the mastermind behind a double homicide. She didn't pull the trigger, but she bought the gun and allegedly convinced her boyfriend to shoot and kill their roommates. He called her the female Charles Manson. She was sentenced to 110 years in prison, but now he thinks she's innocent. So Sarah Jo Pender was born in 1979. Her parents split when she was around 5, and her mom moved to California. So Sarah and her sister were raised by their dad in Indiana, but her mother moved back a few years later, and the girls would spend the weekends and summers with their mom. She graduated high school in 1997. She studied physics at Purdue University and planned a career in biochemistry.
Wow.
Super smart. But she dropped out her freshman year because money was tight, and she became a secretary at a construction company. She worked her way up to reading blueprints and wanted to attend drafting school. She's 20.
Mm-hmm.
She's got her shit together.
Yeah.
She may have dropped out of college, which a lot of people do, and go on to be successful adults, and that's what she was doing. She had a good job. She had a car. She had an apartment, and that's when she met 22-year-old Richard Hole at a fish concert.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. Suddenly.
I thought you were going to say a fish fry.
No.
Which is worse.
It's not the South. It's a little more. If it was Mississippi, it would definitely be a fish fry.
Yeah. Now we're at a fish concert.
Yes.
Okay.
Fish concert. Hmm. So suddenly Sarah falls into the wrong crowd of people. Hmm. Richard was bad news. He already had 6 felonies, including auto theft and breaking and entering. And his friend Andrew wasn't much better. The two were also selling meth.
Oh, God. That escalated from a fish concert.
Yes. So the two men decide to build a meth lab.
Sounds like a solid idea.
So they thought building a meth lab, they would make more money doing it this way than buying meth from other people and then selling it. Because then they're going to have to pay their person that they're getting it from.
Yeah.
So, like, if we just make it, we're cutting out. We're not the middleman anymore.
Oh,
we're the ones in charge. But they need a house to build their meth lab in. And Sarah has an apartment.
Oh, no.
They can't sign a lease because they're convicted felons. So they talk Sarah into signing a lease on a house. And she does. She rents this 2-bedroom house right outside Indianapolis. So it's Sarah and her boyfriend, Richard, his best friend, Andrew, and Andrew's girlfriend, Trisha. So it's the 4 adults living together.
I'm just thinking, I couldn't imagine finding out my rental property was being used as a meth lab.
Girl, well, they don't want them to find out.
Well, for sure.
So Trisha was no better than Andrew or Richard. She had done time too. Andrew had done time for meth, and she did time for forgery, and both Trisha and Andrew were on the run from Nevada and had warrants out for their arrest. Yeah, so this was no Friends episode, the 4 of them living together. The men fought constantly over drugs and money, who was in charge. It was just a pissing contest the whole time. Richard said he wanted to buy a gun to protect them from Andrew, but he couldn't because of those pesky felonies.
Oh, man.
So Sarah, being the good girl and wonderful girlfriend she was, drives to Walmart the morning of October 24th and buys him a gun. and ammo. So that night, the two men get into it over some drug money that was allegedly owed to Andrew from Richard's sister. Sarah decides to leave because she doesn't want to be around the shit. They're fighting. They're arguing. They did it all the time. She's going to take a walk. I just need to get away from it. While she's gone, the fight escalates to the point where the gun is grabbed. And in a fight over it, Andrew is shot by Richard. Then he shoots Trisha in the head and chest. He uses deer slug bullets in the shotgun. These are those big red ones like you see in cartoons.
Okay. Like the I have no idea.
Shotgun shells, which completely wrecks the human body whenever it's hit. Like they explode.
Ugh.
So Sarah walks in. Richard's standing over the two dead bodies. She helps him load them in the back of his truck and then take them and dump them in a dumpster. They immediately go to work cleaning up the crime scene. Then they drive to another friend's house about 20 miles away and try to burn some of the evidence. The bodies were found the next day, less than a mile from the house they were shot in. They were completely unrecognizable because of the gunshots, the bullets. They had no ID on them. They were later identified by their tattoos. And even though they all had records, they weren't from Indiana, so their fingerprints were no use, which I thought fingerprints went across the U.S. Maybe I'm naive.
Yeah.
I thought it would just pop if... I mean, if you're doing like a fingerprint background check...
Maybe it's a state-by-state thing. Maybe. I don't know.
So police know who they are now, and it wasn't long before they figured out where they lived. So they obtain a warrant and go over to the house, and there they find DNA and evidence belonging to Andrew and Trisha. So Richard and Sarah had done a terrible job of cleaning because there was still blood all over the carpets and walls. They arrest Richard on the spot, but he denies he had done anything, but later admits to it after they show him all the evidence that they have against him. 4 days later, they arrest Sarah. So there's no direct evidence and no DNA that's tying her to the murders other than she did buy the gun. She did help clean up and dispose of two bodies, so it's not like she's completely innocent.
Yeah.
Richard does not implicate her at all. So during Sarah's trial, the prosecutor showed a letter that she allegedly wrote to Richard while they were awaiting trial. It said, "Andrew was so mean that night, and that's why I snapped. I didn't mean to kill them. It must have been the drugs. I knew you loved me when you said you would take the blame." Handwriting analysis said it was her handwriting, even though she denied it. And even though all the previous letters she had written were in cursive, and this one was in print. Another inmate named Floyd, who Sarah had met at a prison church event.
Oh.
I mean, there's somewhere I can meet a guy, I guess.
Oh, no.
They became intimate. He met with detectives and said he would help get a confession out of Sarah. Okay. So he was going to help, like, be state's witness to get a confession. Because she still hasn't confessed to anything. He is what us Italians like to call a rat. There is nothing worse. So anyways, he and Sarah decide to fake sick one day on the same day so they could meet at the prison hospital. And once alone, he would get her to admit that she had been the one that killed him. He claims that she told him she got her boyfriend to shoot Andrew and Trisha. She was there when he did it, and that was enough for prosecutor Larry to go after her. She was convicted and sentenced to 110 years, and Richard got two 45-year sentences. He played along with it. He said he was just doing what she said, that she had convinced him to kill their roommates.
Just by telling one rat? This was enough?
And the letter.
That kind of, well, yeah.
That was supposedly written by her. So in 2003, Richard signs a sworn affidavit saying that he had convinced another prisoner to write the letter alleging it was from Sarah and that it was fake. He admitted that he set her up so he could get a plea deal.
Wow.
He showed his roommate several of Sarah's handwriting, like her letters, and he would practice it, and he copied it. After all this time, he said he wanted to do the right thing. They tested the letter, and Sarah's fingerprints weren't even on it.
Wow.
Only Richard and the roommate, Steve's.
Ooh.
Things that should have been tested.
Yeah.
Immediately, you would think her attorney would have thought of that during her trial, but what do I know?
Mm.
I'm just a podcaster.
Her attorney probably didn't believe that she, you know what I mean?
Was innocent. Right.
Just a guess.
Probably. So Richard testifies in 2005, but this was not enough. There was no new trial.
Hmm.
It just, shit was the way it was.
Wow.
In 2008, Sarah escapes from prison with the help of a prison guard and an ex-inmate.
Hmm.
She was the one and only woman to ever escape from Rockville Prison. It took over 2 hours for them to even realize she was gone.
Wow.
She was snuck out in a van and was dropped off at an empty parking lot where she met up with her former cellmate, Jamie, and they drove nearly 70 miles to Indianapolis. The prison guard was caught on CCTV, and he sang like a bird, another rat.
Oh my God.
Jamie was arrested a few days later, and by this time, Sarah was long gone. She was living in Chicago. She had a new identity. She went by Ashley Thompson. She had dyed her blonde hair brown. She had made the U.S. Marshals' top 15 most wanted list, and there was a $25,000 reward for her arrest. She gets a job as an estimator with a contractor with the help of a friend, and for 4 months, she worked, kept to herself, and was living in a condo at the construction site. September 13th, 2008, America's Most Wanted showed her story on TV. September 27th, they air an update. And then in December, there's another episode of America's Most Wanted, kind of like a year-end special. She is number 5 on the list. 10 p.m. that very night, someone recognized her from the show and gives them her address. She's arrested because the nosy neighbor.
Another rat.
This fucking rats. I'm telling you, they're everywhere. Yes. She's arrested and spends the next 6 years in solitary confinement.
6 years?
Yes. Yes.
I hate solitary.
But there's more. Floyd, the guy who said Sarah admitted her involvement in the murders, had wrote a note to one of the detectives, a snitch list. It had names of all these drug dealers, and he said he would wear a wire or talk on a phone tap, whatever it took to save his own ass. So this isn't good. He admitted to making several false testimonies in different court cases to get time knocked off of his sentence, including Sarah's.
Mm.
He had lied. So now we have the ex-boyfriend admitting to faking the letter.
Mm.
And this guy who swore under oath that Sarah had admitted to him that she had done it. So in 2018, law students at Georgetown University have been taking a class called Making an Exoneree. Students research possible wrongful conviction cases and put together evidence on why their case or their person should be exonerated. And so far, 5 prisoners have been exonerated.
Wow.
Sarah's case was looked at in 2023, and a documentary was made about her case by the students, but it was not released to the public.
Ugh.
And as of right now, she is still in prison. She helps out other prisoners in writing their appeals and works in the prison library. Her appeals have all ran out, and she'll not be eligible for parole until 2054 at the age of 75. Her mother and sister have a Facebook page called Free Sarah Jo Pender, where they are asking for the public's help. And Larry Sells, the prosecutor, who is now retired and is adamant that Sarah is innocent. He even reached out to her mother saying he would help Sarah get a new trial and would defend her because
Lord.
He was wrong that she should only be convicted of aiding a criminal, which is only a Class C felony. He said he knew no credible evidence that she committed these murders. Since those two things are clearly wrong and was a bunch of bullshit, he's like, there's nothing else.
That's just crazy that someone can still be in prison for...
They admitted to the shit was wrong.
Yeah.
So there's a book called Girl Wanted by Steve Miller. There's also a Snapped episode a season 8, episode 15 about this case, and a Lifetime movie called She Made Me Do It, starring Jenna Dewan, Channing Tatum's ex-wife.
Yeah, I know.
Crazy case. Yeah. So there are so many more like little details that I could have put in here, but we would be here all night. Also, with cases like these that are covered more than others, there's a lot of conflicting reports. Mm-hmm. One thing I read said that she had become a sex worker, and basically the John that she met on the first time was the one that helped her get the job with his friend's construction company. But then I listened to two different podcasts, and neither one of them mentioned that. So I was like, I don't know if that's true or not, so I don't want to... That's a lot of hearsay.
Yeah.
And I just mentioned it anyways. But, and of course, Murderpedia says something completely different than anything else. So if she is innocent of murder, she is still guilty of destroying evidence and disposing of two bodies, which is awful, but I don't think that necessarily deserves life.
Yeah, the crime doesn't fit the sentence.
No. I mean, if it were my loved one, I would probably think it did, but I don't know. It just, anyways, it's crazy, crazy case.
I don't think I've heard of that.
I've never heard of it either. I've never heard of anybody called the female Charles Manson.
Me either. That's scary. I was like, did she have anything carved on her forehead or,
Nope.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, that's
sorry
good.
To let you down.
Well, my case is totally different than that, which is good, I guess.
I'm excited about but this carnival thing.
Do you want to take a break first? So at first, I thought we covered this case.
Well.
And it's happened before. I double checked, couldn't find it, went to Ohio because that's mentioned, couldn't find it. I'm like, okay, I don't think we covered
it. Safe.
I think I'm safe. And Morbid has an episode on it from a couple of years ago. I'm like, maybe I listened to it. Regardless, I didn't know any of the details, so I wanted to research it. It's not for the faint of heart because it's about a brutal cult in the midst of the satanic panic. And we've talked about creepy carnival workers before.
No offense.
Yeah, no offense. Some of you are not creepy.
I think
maybe.
I think it's just the vagrant lifestyle that is creepy.
Yeah, the transient thing.
Yeah.
And
you're just kind of here and you're there and and you don't.
Yeah, that is true. That's a good point. And maybe that's why this sounded familiar, because we've covered carnival cases before. Mm-hmm. Well, in 1991, William Anthony Ault, who went by Tony, was working as a carny in a traveling fair in DeKalb County when he discovered an outrageous secret. His co-workers, Jimmy Pennick, Mark Goodwin, and brothers Keith and David Lawrence, all in their early 20s, were members of a murderous satanic cult called Satan's Disciples. Instead of calling the authorities or straight up not believing them, he instead wanted to join them. He was intrigued by the cult.
FOMO.
Yeah, he's like, tell me more. I'm interested. So Tony knew about their previous murder on August 30th, 1991, the day before the start of the Fulton County Fair in Ohio, 18-year-old Andrew Wright was stabbed to death. The four young men openly chatted about it around Tony, but they weren't accepting new members. At least from the articles I read, Tony's application was denied.
There's an application procedure?
I guess so. They use the terminology application. I don't know. I know.
I need to see this.
I need to see that application.
They're like, how long were you at your last employment?
How many cults have you been in prior to this one?
What's your highest level of education?
He threatened the guys. This pissed him off because he wanted to join this cult. And he had dirt on them because he had heard them talk about previous murders, or at least one murder. So he threatened them that if they didn't let him join the cult, he'd go to the police and tell them about their previous murder. First of all, do not threaten a carny kill cult, right? That's just not good.
How about just don't threaten anybody, because...
Maybe he didn't believe them all the way.
It never ends well.
I can't imagine. I don't know. But begrudgingly, the guys agreed to let Tony join. At least they were going to indulge him. On September 25th, 1991, Brenda Ferguson, which was a friend and potential cult member, I'm not for sure, was asked to help Mark Goodwin find a secluded place where they could initiate Tony into the Satanic Church. Pretty sure that's not how it works, but I don't know much about it.
I don't get the proof. Well, I don't want to say that either, because I guess I do. Because, you know, a lot of gangs and stuff will have, like, initiation where they have to kill somebody or whatever. Yeah. So I guess it's, now I have something on you, so you're not going to rat me out.
Yeah. Yeah, true. They did have, like, a blood oath that they did. They all cut their hands. But they didn't all have to do something bad to join the cult. But after the carnival closed for the evening, Brenda drove the five guys to a secluded farm building and dropped them off. This abandoned barn was off County Road 40 in DeKalb County. Tony was asked to lie down on a door, like, you know, an old abandoned door or whatever, which was being used as an altar. He was then tied up and gagged, and Keith Lawrence read an invocation to Satan. And I don't know for sure, and I can't know, but I'm thinking he probably thought at this point this was part of it, that this was a normal initiation. Who knows what? I wouldn't know. Until Jimmy pulled out Keith's knife. He then proceeded to cut Tony from his throat to his stomach, then passed the knife to the other men. They each carved ritual symbols, including upside-down crosses, into his flesh. And somehow he was still alive after all of this. And Jimmy asked him if he was ready to die. Then he sliced his throat. After Tony stopped making gurgling sounds, Jimmy severed Tony's hands and head, and they burned them in a fire together. They discarded the rest of his body. And this somehow makes it worse, but once they were done, they stole the money out of his wallet and went to Arby's. Ham and cheese. I'm like, what? No, I don't know what they ordered, but like, get in, gang. We're going to Arby's after we cutting off body parts. How depraved do you have to be to do that and then have an appetite? So the four continued working for carnivals through the end of the season in October. When Jimmy returned to Shelbyville, Mark and the Lawrence brothers headed south in Keith's beat-up van he called Rigor Mortis.
Stop it.
They drove to Florida, where winter carnival jobs could be found. Probably that one you talked about before.
Probably that town.
And then they went on to the Bahamas. I didn't know there was a carnival culture there like there is here, but, I mean, it makes sense, I guess. Carnival's everywhere. And so they thought they were in the clear. Months have passed. Until Mark's father, William Goodwin, made a call to the police on December 12th. He said his son told him that he had witnessed the murder of a man in DeKalb County as part of a satanic sacrifice. So Mark told his dad.
I don't have any words for this entire case. I know, I'm so...
Yeah. So police corroborated that with information from Mark Goodwin's former girlfriend. He told her about it too. He was just telling everybody. On December 13th, state police officers found Tony's dismembered corpse in the farm field near Auburn. They found evidence of a fire and a nearby skull and hand bone fragments. That same day, Mark was arrested and charged with conspiracy to commit murder. Jimmy was arrested at his Shelbyville home on a murder charge. Jimmy allegedly confessed to the murder, and Mark admitted to witnessing the killing. The Lawrences were charged with aiding in murder, and on January 10th, the Lawrences left the Bahamas, and U.S. Custom agents and Metro-Dade police arrested them in Miami as they returned from working for carnivals in the Bahamas. Mark Goodwin said that if he ever sees freedom again, he wants to start a program for young people to steer them clear of Satanism. I can only imagine what that program would be called. Mark did not, is that not just church? Right? Just go to church. Mark did not publicly admit guilt, but he did apologize to the families of the victims. David Lawrence maintained that if he hadn't stuck with his brother, he wouldn't now be facing a future behind bars. David said that he would never have anything to do with his brother ever again. And David described himself as a passive bystander to the satanic activity. You know, he was just there. Yeah. He said he witnessed the blood signing ceremony that all the other guys did when the cult began, but he didn't take part. He also watched as his brother and Mark twice tried unsuccessfully to communicate with the dead at an abandoned cemetery in Shelby County.
I wouldn't hang out with him anymore.
Right?
This is not the vibe.
He clearly doesn't like what's... If he doesn't like anything, then why are you hanging out with him?
Why do you hang out with people when you don't like them, huh?
I know. It's his brother, but still.
So, I don't hang out with my sister. No offense, Brittany. I love you.
Mark often played the heavy metal rock album Diary of a Madman by Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, Lord.
The bat eater himself.
Oh, my God.
And Mark wondered what the upside-down cross and pentagram with a star within a circle on the cover of the album meant. And by the way, I'm not blaming music for any of this. I'm just mentioning it. But when some friends told him they were symbols of the devil, Mark was intrigued and drawn to other people who dabbled in the occult. Mark was the quote-unquote priest of Satan's disciples. Shouldn't he be a disciple? I'm just saying.
He's the head disciple.
And he held the cult in candlelit animal sacrifice rituals once or twice a week.
Oh, no.
While everyone else in the group was intoxicated, he remained sober. He drew a pentagram on the ground, and they chanted an invocation to Satan, conjuring up demons to do their bidding, he said. And I'm not getting into the animal killing, but they would put the animal blood in a silver chalice and pass it around for everyone to drink from. I'd be out.
That makes me want to throw up.
No.
Blech.
Mark and all the members were robed in black, except the females, who wore black lingerie or they were just naked. This was according to Mark, so who knows if this is true. But he said that afterwards, it would be like an orgy. This is just insane.
Well, now it's a party.
A lot of wild dancing, the satanic choir would sing their stuff, and then they would delve into sex.
Do you think their choir's like the choir from Sister Act?
I wonder what this choir would sing. I don't even know.
Ozzy.
Oh,
or
right.
Rob Zombie.
Oh, gosh. When asked about their satanic connections, Keith Lawrence said that Satanism was, quote, like a drug. You get high, and once you're over it, you've got to inject even more than the first time.
I feel like a lot of Christians feel that way about Jesus and stuff.
I guess it's a religion, but it's a religion, so it makes some people feel good in their own way. And initially in court, the Satanism element was downplayed. I don't know if it's because their attorney was like, this is ridiculous or what, but authorities seized 2 footlockers and nylon carrying bags, 17 books, and assorted literature dealing with Satanism, the occult, witchcraft, and magic and religion. They were found among 142 items seized. Several were emblazed with pentagrams, the words Satan or hell, or 666. Also found were tarot cards and a framed invocation to Satan. Just occult stuff. Jimmy Lee Pinnock pled guilty to 1 count of murder and was sentenced to 60 years, which was the maximum allowed under his plea agreement, and he had to serve them consecutively to a prior Ohio sentence, the guy he killed beforehand, Andrew Wright. Keith Lawrence pled guilty to conspiracy to commit murder and received 30 years in prison and then 20 years of probation. His brother David Lawrence pled guilty to assisting a criminal and received 8 years. Mark Goodwin pled to assisting a criminal and battery committed by means of a deadly weapon. He received 8 years for each charge to be served concurrently. And I tried to find out where these men are today, but I only found information on Keith Lawrence. He was released from prison early and began his 20 years of probation in 2006. So he's almost done with probation by now. He allegedly turned his life around and received 2 college diplomas while incarcerated. Again, I didn't read any other articles about them, so I'm assuming they didn't get arrested or do anything crazy after this.
So they just did this for a sacrifice.
Basically, they were talking openly about the cult, and the guy wanted to join, and they said no. And then him saying, I'm going to go to police, they thought they had to get rid of him. Like, just let him join. Like, who? You know what I mean?
I
know they kill people.
They sound like the cool kids that they're like, you cannot sit with us at lunch. And he was like, then I'm going to go tell. And so they beat him up in the bathroom, but it's much more serious than that.
Right. Instead of just saying, no. I don't know. Yeah. Or just letting him join. Not that I condone joining satanic cults, but I mean,
be inclusive, damn it.
Even with cults. Your cults.
Be inclusive.
Look what happened.
Now look.
Well, we have 2 new patrons.
Awesome.
Which is very cool. We have Jason B. from Arkansas.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, Jason. We love a Jason.
We do love a Jason.
And we have Kelly C. from Ohio.
Do you have the pins in?
Not yet.
Damn it.
I have them handy if you want to pluck them in. I don't know where that city is. I'd have to Google it. But thank you.
Thank you.
And Kelly has a case suggestion, and she said she doesn't think many people have heard of it. She's only heard the girl's name mentioned on 2 podcasts for about 10 seconds total, and she searched all over for it. Kelly Camargo? She was 16, partying with friends at a bar, disappeared, and was found murdered a couple weeks later.
Oh my gosh.
And it's still unsolved. I haven't heard about it. I'll have to look into that.
We need to look into that and maybe do a little plug about it on a future episode.
Yeah. And thanks, Jason and Kelly. I'll mail out your stickers this week.
Yeah, thanks, guys. So the photo of Kate and her children may be the biggest controversy over a royal image since 1539, when King Henry VIII sent his court artist Hans Holbein to paint Anne of Cleves so he could consider her for marriage.
Oh my gosh.
So when he and Anne meet, Henry is said to have remarked that the painting was of poor likeness and had their marriage annulled.
Oh my God.
So he got catfished by his court artist.
Oh my God.
Poor Anne.
What a terrible breakup.
I mean, and here we are thousands of years later, and we're still doing this to people on dating sites.
People are still the same. The absolute same.
We're still face-tuning pictures on social media. We're still catfishing people.
Oh my gosh. He's like, go paint a lot of women, bring them to me, and I will swipe them with my arm.
He's like, here she is. Look at her. Isn't she great? And he's like, yes, I will marry her. And then she shows up and he's like, the fuck?
This is not, I do feel sorry for her.
Not what I signed up for. So anyways, Easter Sunday, waiting on her and Jesus.
I mean,
we still have another week.
We do. We'll have a whole nother recording before we see Kate.
Boy.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I watched A Quiet Place 2.
Is it good? I mean, I know it's been out for a while. I have not seen it.
It's so much better than the first one.
Is it really?
I'm telling you, Lacey.
I'm so excited.
It had me in a ball of anxiety. Ugh. There's definitely more jump scares.
I'll have to wait a minute to watch that.
Well, they're traveling at this point to get to a different place. Like, they're traveling to get to a safe place, so there's a lot more people and opportunities for those alien things to hear them and gobble them up.
Mm-hmm.
And that baby.
Oh, no.
Lord, it's still babying.
It's
girl, it's still babying.
There's no way.
We'd never make it. If we had to hide with Anders.
No, not even for a second.
No, like, we wouldn't get to my car.
No.
I'd be like, y'all walk behind me.
Like, that child should not have been brought into that quiet place world.
Listen, I've said it before. I wouldn't make it either because Max can't be quiet at all. He would 100% giggle or something, trip over something, and then we'd all be gobbled up.
Well, I'm interested in the prequel because I want to know more about the monsters.
Oh, I know. I'm excited about that too.
I'm guessing you don't learn anything about them in the second one.
No. No, you don't.
It's so mysterious. Well,
maybe a couple little things that are basically irrelevant.
Yeah.
But they're different than the first one. And that's good.
To watch it.
I did see the previews. Have you seen the previews for Late Night with the Devil?
Is that the one with the Sweeney?
No.
No, the no.
That's the nun one.
Okay.
This is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be one of my new favorites and scare the piss out of me, or it's going to be complete trash, like the new Exorcist is. I'm hoping I'm thoroughly shaken and not stirred, but it's the producers of Paranormal Activity and Barbarian.
Okay.
So basically, it's Halloween night, 1977. This talk show host is interviewing a girl who is allegedly possessed, and then just shit goes wrong. Hmm. Like, on live TV. He's supposed to be doing this. And the trailer looks so good. You need to write this down and look at this trailer. It's in theaters now.
Oh,
and it will be on Shudder in April.
I don't have Shudder, but
I don't either. I feel like as much scary movies as we talk about, one of us should get it and give the password. Also, 28 years later, there is a new zombie movie coming out. There's no release date yet. Just been confirmed that it is in the works. Mm. So, you know, they have 28 days, 28 weeks, and this is going to be 28 years after. So it's part of, it's like making it a trilogy.
This. Holy crap.
This is one of my.
It's been forever since that movie came out.
28 years. No, I'm kidding. It's not been that long, but it feels like it.
I was a baby.
But it, these movies have to be some of my favorite zombie movies other than World War Z. So, anyway.
Well, that's exciting.
So we were in Hot Springs this weekend. I'll tell you this real quick. For spring break and St. Patrick's Day shenanigans, and some of our friends came up from Dallas. Max's dad's trying to get a bunch of stuff done to the lake house before all the guests come in for the eclipse. So we're walking around downtown, waiting to see the world's shortest St. Patrick's Day parade and the world's largest potato.
Wait.
In the same place. And I have pictures of Max by the world's largest potato.
Does it change yearly, or is this the potato that's petrified? Like, no, there's a new biggest potato each year?
I don't know. That's a fair question. Anyways, so.
How big was it, though?
I'll show you a picture. Okay. It's enormous. So they're handing out, like, pamphlets and paper and shit during the parade. You know, people are walking and all the stuff. And someone hands me this piece of paper, and I was going to throw it down like a good Christian would. And I look at it, and imagine my surprise. It is Atlas Obscura. Do you know what that is? That is my favorite place to go to online for all my spooky road trip and weird things. It goes state by state and will tell you, like, all the weird things.
Why was that handed out?
Because Atlas Obscura is going to be in Hot Springs Eclipse Weekend doing a whole thing. I know.
Are you going down there?
I'm going down Thursday.
Ugh.
I'm going to be there the whole weekend because friends coming in from D.C. and
everyone's and just Beverly wild Hills about this.
And Dallas.
Beverly Hills.
They're like roommates from when Max's dad was at Georgetown. They're like
they're about to be the Beverly Hillbillies.
Listen, for real. So so there's going to be some bands and one of the guys from Mythbusters and a bunch of other cool shits going on.
Man.
And Atlas Obscura is putting it all on. It's turned into a whole thing.
Well, that's cool.
I got to stock up on Diet Cokes in case this is the...
Just in case this is the
eclipse
end.
Eclipse, or how did you say it? What did you call it?
Apocalypse.
Eclipse. Why can I never remember that? I said eclipse.
Eclipse.
What a dumbass.
Apocalypse.
Anyways, I think that's all my housekeeping shit that I have.
Yeah, well...
Where are we next week? Do you know?
I don't know.
Allow me to
it's
tell you.
It's written down in my planner. And that's it.
We're in Rhode Island.
Oh, Rhode Island.
And
it's very mysterious.
And also space.
Yeah.
We're recording the Patreon tomorrow.
We are. I did some weird research.
I am excited for yours because I'm covering more of an actual space shuttle tragedy and some other random not so fun facts about space and what happens if you die in space and how they dispose of you.
Oh, I did read about that.
Yeah. Did you talk about it too?
No, but I'll know what you're talking about.
You'll just have to listen anyways.
Yeah, I'll have to go through it.
But I'm excited about this.
I am too.
This is a very obscure topic, but it's also...
I felt like Neil Tyson Degrassi. Is that his name? Degrasse. Oh my gosh. That's how much I know about space. I don't know how to fully pronounce his name.
I feel like I should have paid so much more attention in school whenever we covered like space shit and the planets, because researching and reading all the things, I was like, this is fucking fascinating and terrifying.
I feel like we did not cover it enough.
I feel like we didn't cover it enough.
In school.
I feel the same.
I was trying to reflect on it, and I'm like, we had earth science, we had life science.
Mm-hmm.
Was space like a week, and was I sick?
Probably.
I don't remember learning about space other than like
you had to grade school, the planets.
That's it.
You had to make the planet thing. You had to, you know,
yeah, that's
take
true.
The planet apart and what's the mm-hmm. center and the outer and the Milky Way.
But it was just about planets, really. It wasn't about other stuff.
No, that's all we learned about. Listen, if you're a science teacher, teach more about space.
Teach us.
But I don't remember learning about like the Challenger disaster or the Columbia disaster or Apollo 13. I don't remember learning about any of those things.
I really don't either. I truly do not. Maybe
this is what
I blocked it out
because we're older, and when our parents would tell us, I don't remember, that was so long ago. Maybe we just don't remember because it's so long ago.
Maybe so. I really don't remember learning much about this.
I'm real excited about it. And I'm also shocked at what astronauts make yearly, because I looked up all that shit too.
Oh, I wouldn't have even thought that.
Yeah. I wanted to know how much they make. I wanted to know what it takes to be an astronaut. How do you apply? Ugh. Where do you go? And
Titusville?
I was a little disappointed with all of it.
Oh.
Maybe I shouldn't say disappointed, because astronauts are amazing people. So
it's just that they have to do a lot and they might not make as much money as
well. And they
expecting.
Have to do so much, and they may not even be selected because they're so picky. Listen, stop talking. Tune into Patreon.
Tune in.
No more.
We'll post
where do
it
they
when
join?
It's up. Go to patreon.com/United States of Murder. And we have monthly bonus episodes. You can catch up on our backlog.
How many do we have backlog?
I truly don't even know.
300,000. No, I'm kidding.
We started doing it. I don't know, even remember when we started our Patreon.
We need to look that up.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a bunch
There's
of them.
A bunch. Three seasons worth, almost.
Yeah, maybe two and a half.
Yeah.
I don't know. But go join it. It's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.